I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show once again. Dry across most of the country and even a bit of ploughing back on the menu in the south and east of the country. Today, I'm joined by Adam, Darren and Aidan to talk all things farming. As normal, to start, I have quick fire questions. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, Alice asks, I have a few heavy cows to sell. Would I have more customers around the ring if I TV tested them before bringing them to the barn? Adam, talk to me.
Yeah, so there's still a bit of confusion out there on this, and we wrote this a couple of times, and Darren had a very good piece there in sort of early January around questions and answers, if anybody wants to go back and look at it on farmersjournal.ie. But basically, selling a cull cow, if they're over 36 months, technically they have to be tested in the next herd, we'll say, that if they're not within 6 months of a test when they're sold. But the exception, I suppose, is, or the uniqueness of that is, or in a cull cow situation, a lot of those, 80 to 85% of those cows are traded into a controlled feedlot situation, or maybe even slaughter, Jack, within a couple of days of being bought on the mart. So a lot of those customers will not pass any remarks on that cow not being tested. So I'd say no, go on to the mart, and the chances are you won't see any negative to selling that cow without a test within 6 months.
Okay, so I'm just assuming that Alice's cows are over 6 months from the TV test, and you're saying rock away and
yes,
take the chance that you have enough of customers around the ring. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah,
from
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Okay, we might touch off it again. Tom says, ask Darren, I've early March yos in on hay for the last month and feeding a pound of oats to the doubles and tribbles, but in the last week I've 2 yos out of 60 prolapsing. Am I doing something wrong? Darren, I never liked prolapsing, right?
Yeah, without knowing the exact details, Jack, it could be that, say, maybe he's feeding once a day and maybe he's away out to work in the morning, he's coming in, putting hay in front, giving him oats at the same time, and that would be sort of, you'd be giving a bulky feed and then giving concentrates on top of it. That might be it. Generally, with prolapse cases, there can be a greater risk with hay because our haylage is bulkier feed. Yeah. And then, say, depending on what time of day the concentrates to be fed. What I do, Jack, is make sure they have feed to appetite in regards to hay because they won't gorge on it then, and then possibly split the oats. Now, he's feeding a very small amount, like a pound is 0.4 of a kilo. So that should be there should be no issue on that. But it might be just as one of those things that he is getting a couple of cases which often come and that diet isn't helping.
Okay, so maybe make sure there's hay there all the time and maybe split the oats is what I'm hearing if you can do something.
Now just one last comment on, there has been a few farmers in recent years that have had significant issues in the next few weeks, say, on that, and they've had no other choice but to either cut down the hay to a sort of nearly a small supplementary level up to concentrates or bring in silage that they just have had so many issues. So it'll be very much a case of try and see how it goes.
Absolutely. Excellent. Back to you in a minute. Debbie asks Aidan, realistically, how long can I store Beeston's in a barrel in the dairy beside the bulk tank? Aidan, talk to me.
Yeah, sure, Jack. I suppose we all kind of grew up with the bucket of Beeston's, and it might be a half an inch of scum on top of it. You pull it off and then feed the calf. But really, like, that's probably not acceptable anymore, because the research is showing that the more bacteria that's present in that Beeston's or colostrum, the less antibodies the calves can absorb. So the Chagas advice is to get that Beeston's or colostrum into a fridge within 3 hours of the cow being milked. And then that lasts then in the fridge for about 48 hours, so about 2 days. And then, you know, that then would want to be disposed of or fed to other older calves, and then fresh Beeston's put in. So there's a fair bit of, you know, increase in knowledge in the last 10 years, probably around Beeston's and how to manage it. So, and I do think it's important. So definitely worth putting the effort in. I wouldn't be leaving it in the barrel for a few days by any means anymore, into the fridge, and dump it after 48 hours.
Excellent. Okay, big change. We might come back to some of that calving stuff in a minute, Aidan. Adam, to start with you, last week we had Mark Trade was sizzling on the front page. This week the weanling trade is on fire. A bit like the Irish rugby team, you can't do anything wrong at the moment. Where's this all going to end? Like,
yeah, I don't know, Jack. And like, not, you don't want to obviously talk down the trade, but I was in Mohill Mart on Wednesday and I seen, you know, 295 kilos hitting 1100, and you just ask yourself, gosh, where is that weanling going? You know, or somebody knows something there around that ring that maybe somebody else doesn't. But look, it's really positive. And look, you might say suckler farmers need that, Jack. You know, it's been a hell of a year in terms of 2022 in terms of feeding that cow and keeping fertilizer spread and keeping concentrates fed. But in terms of that weaning trade at the moment, it's really bananas.
Yeah, exactly. And not to talk it down, Adam, but as you say, there must be long-term confidence. Like, I mean, as you say, these guys are no fools. Like, and if they're paying 350 a kilo, you know, for these weanlings, like, I mean, they must have long-term confidence that, listen, the trade needs to be at a certain number going forward. A bit like milk price has lifted a level. I'll talk to Aidan about it in a minute. Like, you know, I mean, beef price must be getting up there to a new level.
Yeah. And I suppose it's important maybe smaller finishers don't get caught up in that, because around the rings at the moment, you have a couple of big, big outfits buying, and they have probably, you know, in all probability, maybe not signed contracts, but they've got the nod to drive on for those, especially the heavy weanlings, because they're a sort of short keep. You know, that 500 kilo weanling hitting very good money at the moment, but he's probably going to come out in May or June before anything corrects itself. I'd say you'll see beef price maybe even kicking on more to May or June. But it's important, I suppose, that your farmer buyer then, or your summer grazer, doesn't get caught up in that hype in terms of driving on, you know, and maybe does a budget. Just, I mean, look, we had it there in the story this week, you know, a weanling at 380 kilos has been bought today. It's 353 a kilo. It's 56 cent ahead of where we were this week last year. But that needs to be over €6, well over €6 to get out for February 2024. But I suppose a lot of those at the moment have been bought for feedlot systems in intensive meal and going to come out in May and June when numbers are still going to be tight.
Okay, I mean, as you said, you were in Mohill, you were in the at the Orivo big sale. Who was buying, like, and like, was the trade really on fire? Like, you mentioned one price there, €1,100 for that 295 kilo, but what is that? Was that an outlier? Like, or was
it? It wasn't. No, to be honest, Jack, €3 is the new base price for very plain weanlings. You're talking 350, 360, 370 for the tops over there. Belgian blue weanlings up at 380. And in terms of buying, as I said, you have a number of big, big finishers buying. Not that many people buying, but big, big finishers. Exporters were there, and exporters were operating online, but they're actually falling off in terms of not being able to compete with that feedlot finisher. And you'd probably six or seven really good customers. Look, that's a Monaghan Day sale. It's a famous sale in the west of Ireland. 450 weanlings, all continental. You know, there wasn't, I stood there for an hour, there wasn't one dairy bred animal came into that ring for that hour. You know, it's generations of continental animals coming into that ring. And I suppose the lads around the ring are willing to pay that premium for that type of an animal in terms of the kill out efficiency and the growth rate of those calves. So, yeah, really, really good to see it. But it's all finishers. It was all finishers on that day were buying those animals.
Okay, back to the beef trade, Adam. Is it still going strong?
Yeah, pretty good, Jack. 520 there for 25 for bullocks, 530, 35 for heifers. Side deals going on, as I said, still going on around the corners. Cull cows very good, 520. Bulls up to 550 now in terms of under 24-month bulls, which is a really good price for them. And yeah, nothing on the horizon. A little bit of gamesmanship and playing games there in some factories, you know, kicking cattle out maybe be a couple of days, trying to spook the market and say, you know, beef around Europe is coming back. I've looked at that and I can't see anything at the moment in terms of beef coming back around Europe. UK price is still very strong. Kieran Milley in Northern Ireland would be writing this week as well that it's very, very firm in the north of Ireland. So nothing at all there at the moment to suggest that anything untoward is going to happen. And I'd say supplies are going to be tight for the next, they're going to get tighter and tighter, I'd say, over the next couple of weeks.
Okay, excellent. I see a photo of Tullamore Farm Manager Sean Diver there on the paper this week. He's waving a wand around weighing cattle. Adam, have you moved anything? Have you moved any of the bulls yet, or what?
No, we had a conversation on it last on Saturday actually with him on. I suppose when you're looking at 350 or 360 a kilo of weanling, we're going to do the budget. Just in terms of what those weanlings are worth and what it's going to take to finish them out for the next 2 or 3 months. Look, I suppose we're in a finishing system there, and we've finished the bulls every year, and we're probably not going to diverge from that, but in terms of what price those weanlings, like those weanlings are, you know, between 400 and 500 kilos, they're exactly what that sort of feed dot finisher needs at the moment. And again, we're not on a contract, or we're not on anything at all with a factory. So we're like a small finisher down there. So you'd wonder what's the best thing to do. But look, we're going to look at the figures, and we'll do it in the paper maybe next week or the week after to see what the best thing, or what it looks like in terms of figures on paper.
He's spring calving down there. Like, are the ropes on, or what's the crack at the moment?
Yeah, he's calving away themselves, Jack. In fairness, we'd a cow calved down there Thursday morning. Actually, he put it up on Twitter there, a nice little photo of a cow, a black limousine cow, who's been doing a real good job with three daughters in the herd. And that's another one on the ground Thursday morning. So, yeah, nothing at the moment. No concerns, I suppose, at the moment. No calving difficulty. Cows are calving down with good milk. No issues. He weighed the heifers there as well. Really happy with the heifers' performance. I think, you know, taking the heifers back into that shed that we built, it was a real good move, because he's been able to keep a tighter eye on them and maybe, I'm not saying looking after them a bit better, but definitely it's good to have them home, and I'd say weight gains have been better because they're at home.
All in the 1 yard. Adam, I see a piece there in terms of back to basics on calving in the journal. You know, again, a kind of a it's a reminder, like some people say you change the date of the page or whatever, but I mean, there is a reminder factor there of getting the basics done well, like, you know what I mean, can make the job run so smoothly.
There is, Jack, and the big thing there is progress and not to panic. Some people are helter-skelter around a yard and kicking buckets whenever a water bag appears and maybe lose the head, and that's just the nature of some farmers, whereas others maybe take a more laid-back approach, and I suppose somewhere in the middle maybe that you want to meet that. And look, talking to Donal Lynch and Tullamore again, he'd say progress is key there, and just if a cow is making progress, let her at it, but if she's not making progress and you see something happening or maybe feet crossed or different aspects there, look, people are calving cows for years and years and years. Lots of experience there, but yeah, some handy tips in that around sort of handling that difficult calving and what to do and when to go in, and there's different maybe times there for heifers and cows, so it's a nice little reminder on the beef page this week.
Any bag stuff or slurry moving up your part of the country, or is it still a little bit early February?
Yeah, I was going to comment on that. You made the comment about ploughing. There's lots of lad ploughing at the beginning. Yeah, yeah. We be ploughing with tankers up here. No, we're not. We're not. No, ground is very good. And there's a lot of slurry moving. Yeah, a lot of umbilical systems. Look at umbilical systems. Years ago, there was maybe one contractor within a 20 or 30 mile radius had an umbilical system, but there's actually dairy farmers around me now buying umbilical systems to have in their yard so that they can spread slurry whenever they want or whatever, and just getting out that early. So yeah, a lot of slurry moving, a lot of umbilical systems on the road. Not much fertilizer moving, but of course it's the 14th of February up here, or 15th of February actually, when we can start to spread fertilizer in the northwest. But I'd say lads will be gearing up. They'll be hoping that weather, like ground conditions and weather is really, really good up here at the moment. And I'd say they're hoping that weather will continue on to the 15th to be able to get out that little bit of, especially on dairy farms.
Okay, I see you've a couple of articles there in the Calf magazine. I'll talk to Darren about it in a minute, like, you know, but it's a big job that's coming next week in the journal, the Calf, the special Calf magazine. Like, that it's, you know, we saw it on the roadshow. It's a big part of the income on suckler farmers, Adam.
It's just massive. It's all of the income, Jack, and that's why any change to this payment is a direct, you know, income hit or an income plus on these farms. You know, 139% on cattle rearing farms, that single farm payment or that basic support payments is coming in there. So we have a couple of case studies there. I've wrote a little bit of full-time suckler farmers and the challenges that lie ahead for those. They are probably the one cohort that I'd be really worried about, and we've wrote about that in the CAP booklet. But there's a couple of nice examples there of different farms that hopefully farmers can associate with and maybe picture themselves and at least get the chat going or get the thought process going as to what's going to happen for the rest of the year.
Excellent. Super job. Thanks, Adam. Talk to you later. Darren, if the suckler job is like the Irish rugby team, Everton is going well. The lamb job is more like the Welsh. They're going back a bit, like, but still relative to other years, they're probably not that bad either, like in terms of the price job.
Well, in regards, say, the price, Jack, I suppose, look, at just 60 to 70 cent behind this time last year. And coming at a time when your import costs are at record levels. Like, if you put a lamb at €6 a kilo, feed him 1 to 1.2 kilos a meal, he's doing well to break even at the moment.
Okay. Now, and my point was, it's still 150 a kilo, probably ahead of where it was 2-3 years ago. Isn't that fair to say?
Taken on board. I was at a IFA sheep meeting on Wednesday night in Tuam, giving a market update there. And look, we were going through that. We were talking about to say from the last 2 years, you're 150 a kilo up this year. The average price last year was 686 a kilo. So far this year, 623 a kilo. And like, the market has increased in recent years. We can't say ignore that fact.
Yeah.
The unfortunate thing is just it's been totally eroded by input costs. It's been...
And it's the same right across the sectors. I'll talk to Aidan about it in a minute again, you know, but... Yeah, no, look at that. I mean, that's the reality. And output price is one piece, but the cost job is the other, and the margin is what's left for the farmer, and that's what's been squeezed. And you've had a couple of good meetings on that in the last couple of weeks, and there's more on that in the paper this week. I mean, just on the other piece, I mean, that we've talked about over the last couple of weeks, Darren, is the Kildare job and that proposed deal with Don Meats. So it's officially on now. Isn't that fair to say? As in, it has been notified to the competition authority before. We've been speaking in a bit of a vacuum. We haven't heard anything from Kildare or from Don Meats, but the job is on now at the moment. We'll have to see where it goes.
Yep, the job is on, Jack, until the 20th of February. Organisations, farmers themselves, anyone can make a submission to the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, who are the CCPC. They're the body that looks after it. A lot of worry too, Jack, in meetings at the moment. A lot of, I suppose, maybe frustration at land prices, but then concern of what could happen. And our colleague Lurkin had that article saying that if you were to look at the index that the CCPC used, this wouldn't have a hope of going through.
True.
And But unfortunately, we have seen in the past deals going through that have significantly reduced competition. And like, if we look at, say, on the, even I suppose farmers in Northern Ireland will be acutely aware of this, in that you now have two factories buying over 90% of sheep, of lamb that's up there. So like, it is something that farmers will be watching closely, and definitely they're going to be watching what metrics are used. And like, the big one for me, Jack, is this: if you look on the beef side, and yes, there is a lack of transparency, but there is some level of transparency. There is, you can see what factories are paying each week by the department's official price reporting. If you look on the dairy side, you go to and you do the milk leagues. If we look on the sheep side, all we have is to go on courts. And like, I have had a few people say back to me, oh, sure, maybe the Dawn buying Kildare will be a good thing, and time will tell. But see, when you have no idea on what the actual factories are paying or how they've performed, and you're dealing in a vacuum, that's where the worry or the concern comes in. Because if this deal is to go through, and if the Department of Agriculture, I assume, will have a role, or will have a submission or whatever into it. But I don't think they can stand back and allow a deal like this to come through without some level or some transparency coming into the sector.
Okay, I hear you. So that might be what needs to come out in the next, as you say, couple of weeks, or that there is some publication of some material that's real concrete that happens on the ground rather than just quotes. Excellent, Darren. Listen, we'll leave it for the moment because I know you're under pressure and it's something I think we'll talk about again. Just to touch on a few other little bits and pieces, I see a few door lambs rooting around near me here still on stubbles. You know, maybe a touch, cleaning up a touch of rape, like we'll say, on flat tillage ground. Like, when are these lambs going to be gone? Or kind of what's the timeline for them, you know, in terms of, they're probably, for me, looking at them, it looks like to be the tail end of the crop kind of just there now at the moment. Like.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Jack, if you look at the market at the moment and talking to market managers this week, that for every good pin of lambs to be sold, you probably have two pin in the store lambs. And that's unknown for this time of the year. The amount of lambs, 37 to 40, 42 kilos, that's in the system is phenomenal. And look, that's, I suppose, we expected a certain amount of that. If we go back to the CSO figures from last June, they would have said there was 200,000 sheep in the other category, which includes sort of mostly lambs. Now, sometimes them figures are overinflated, but leave aside that, if there was 200,000 extra, there was 40,000 less lambs killed in the back end of the year. So I think there's a lot of sheep on farms, Jack, to come. And like you say, when are they going to come? A lot of them lambs haven't performed like what farmers would have thought or what would have expected or what they've done in recent years. Some of them lambs were being killed off them forage crops. And I'm hearing a lot of stories of lambs now requiring feeding coming off forage crops, or also lambs that have been, say, away in winter grazing or that type of thing, requiring significant feeding. You'd say this, if they were going to be meal fed, yes, they could be pushed on. But I think that there'll be a lot of lambs in the system, Jack, right up into April and May this year, that you're going to have a hog of kill lingering on for a long time.
Okay, it's a bit different. The year's a bit different in it. Last one on the scheme, Darren. There's no TAMS list just yet. There's no official on-farm investment scheme, the new TAMS, I call it. There's no official list yet. Is that where we are?
Yeah, and I'd say if we had a year, Jack, for the amount of questions of the cat beatings around that, or even that we're getting in, there's serious interest, massive interest in it. A lot of it coming from dairy farmers that have maxed out, say, maybe their investments under TAMS, want to go again, want to start planning. Wondering, do they go and do a job, or do they say wait for TAMS funding? There is big growing pressure to come out for information on this. We've seen this week a lot of, I suppose, maybe frustration again around farmers that want to say maybe buy low emission slurry spreading equipment, don't know now whether dribble bars is going to be grant aided. Peter Thomas Keaveney had a piece there around the challenges of, say, the trail and shoe, which the department is, promoting because of reduced ammonia emissions relative to the dribble bar. So there is a lot of, I think there's huge interest, but we really need to see something come this soon. The farmers' wars promised, I know that's on a word that is drawn out, but we were told there would be something, or the on-farm capital investment scheme will be launched in early 2023. And I think the longer you go into a vacuum, and particularly a lot of farmers hope that they would have something before they get really snowed under with cattle.
I mean, just to finish on that point, you have a lambing focus this week. And there's an article there, Darren, I see on why more farmers are looking at lamb castration. What's going on there? Like?
Yeah, essentially, Jack, it's I suppose to do with input costs at the moment. That's one of the main challenges, say, from 2022 would have been farmers finishing ram lambs with an adequate cover of flesh. Now, whether this be from less concentrates bought to feed to lambs, or that there was less grass supplies around because possibly our quality was reduced because there wasn't as much fertilizer. But whichever one of the two causes, there was a lot of challenges in finishing ram lambs. And I think, there is no doubt in this, where grassland management is good, where grass quality is good, well then castrating lambs reduces, say, the potential to avail of the benefits of finishing lambs entire. Where the big challenge comes is that if grassland is anyways, limiting in either management or quality or quantity, well, then you get the situation of ram lambs growing into a frame, harder to put on a cover of flesh. And that's something that farmers have been concerned about. And it's something that a lot more are saying that looking at all prospects for this year, concentrate prices are predicted to stay high. Yes, there is seen to be the potential for fertilizer prices to come back, but I think that'll be well into the season with the amount of fertilizer that's probably bought at higher prices. So some farmers then are saying, will I turn and will I castrate either some of my later born lambs where I've had challenges before, or go and castrate them all? I think it'll probably be a halfway house, and that you'll have more farmers looking at castrating maybe later born lambs because they have been where the challenges have been.
And Darren, excuse my ignorance now, but are they putting bands on at kind of at a relatively young age? Like,
I think that's where you're going to see a bit of a change back. This, you will see some farmers maybe coming in after a certain date and saying that any twin lambs or triplet born lambs after this, I'll ban those. Some farmers might be leaving, say, the single lambs entire because they'll obviously be growth benefits there and they'll push on. But that's generally what you're seeing. I don't think it'll be a major shift back to people using the Bordizo. Now, that could happen. And I suppose the Bordizo gives more options to look at the market as you go on, because rubber ring castration has to be done within 7 days of a lamb being born. The Bordizo can be done up to 3 months, but I think that it'll probably be the rubber ring you'll see a lot of farmers looking at. Now, when I say a lot, Jack, I don't see a massive change, but I do see a marked change. So I do.
Thanks, Darren. Chat to you again next week. Aidan, I presume you hadn't time for watching any rugby at the weekend. I met a few of your crew actually over the weekend, and they were hitting for 20% calves. Is that where most of them are?
Actually, there's a lot of them coming early, Jack. Yeah, it's fair to say. And in fairness, some dairy farmers are bringing it back earlier anyway, intentionally. You know, so they're trying to capture, I suppose, more milk from cows and they're calving now in the middle of January as opposed to, you know, the first week in February is maybe would have been the traditional. So, you're seeing the change. But cows are coming early. And as we talked in the show before around the heifers and the cedar and the synchronization programs, they are also coming early. So a lot of those cows, farms that have 20% calved, it's primarily heifers.
Yeah, exactly. We have to mention, I suppose, Aidan, the sudden passing of Pádraig Walsh. In fairness, he was a dairy farmer, but he was a farm leader for all farmers. Like, but he was very much a good dairy farmer.
Yeah, brilliant. I was actually looking back through my phone. I passed. You know, I usually go on the motorway now. Before, everyone used to go to Dublin. You'd pass Pádraig Walsh's farm, and you'd always look in because it was always stunning. And I remember 2017. For some reason, I went home from Dublin the old road. And I passed Pádraig's place and I could see him out in the field setting up wires. This was I checked the phone, it was actually the 5th of February. And I'd say he'd about 20, well, maybe 15% of the farm grazed at that stage. And I took photographs because it was so impressive. Like the residuals were spot on, no damage done, cows looking great. And this is the first week for, and he, you know, on the other side of it, Jackie, is he'd all the time in the world to talk to me around what he was doing and why he was doing it. And I think back to it every day, not every day, but I think back to it regularly since. You know, and the time he had for people, a huge loss for the industry. He was young, you know, he had a lot more to give. And it makes it all the harder for his family, his wife Ella and the family and passion.
And the lads, like, so. Exactly. Yeah. No, 20 years too early, you could say, like, in effect, like, you know. But no, may he rest in peace. He delivered a lot to the industry, Aidan. And as you say, he always had time to talk. He always had time for, and he was on the road. He was gone. He invested so much of himself in others, like, it was phenomenal.
No, he was one of a kind.
Excellent. Speaking of good ground, I see a farmer paying €420 an acre for a good bundle of acres now on a long-term lease job up in Stradbally. Like, I mean, dairy farmers are really setting the pace, Aidan, and this comes back to your piece along the nitrates thing and effectively diluting this organic nitrogen piece. I know some of them are growing as well in the second units and this kind of thing as well, like, you know, but there is definitely a push on in terms of land price, and it's driven primarily on the dairy side of things. Isn't that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely, Jack, and absolutely no surprise. You know, this is something we would have flagged for the last 12 months. As soon as we heard that the derogation, upper limit and derogation was being removed from 250 to 220, and when you combine that then with the impact of banding, thousands more dairy farmers were going to require additional land if they were to remain compliant. So the fact that the price of land has increased is absolutely no surprise, and it's going to continue that way. You know, it's going to keep going unless the government now take action, the Minister for Agriculture takes action, decides, okay, we're going to push out this condition. We're going to go back to Brussels and say, we need more time before this condition around the reduction in the upper limit kicks in. Before, you know, like it's as I mentioned before on the show, the future of this derogation is based on water quality in 2022 versus 2021. That to me is way too short. You know, the science is also saying it's way too short. Chagas analysis is saying we need 3 or 4 years at least for measures that have been introduced to have an impact in terms of water quality. So that's the message that needs to go back to Brussels. And I'm not sure if the political will is there to do it. But I mean, they're doing a disservice to Irish agriculture if you don't. And that's reflected now in the fact that this land, you know, the price land is increasing. Beef, sheep and tillage farmers aren't able to compete with the dairy farmers.
Yeah.
Plus, you also have a situation, and we might talk about it later on, but the price of milk is likely to decrease. Profitability in dairying is going to decrease. Farmers want to be very careful how much dairy farmers I'm talking about would want to be very careful how much they're going to spend on land, because if this is a long-term lease, they're signing themselves up to pay for that for the next 10 years. Look, you after a year like 2022, you pay any money for land because the profitability was in the system.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, there's no guarantee that even for this year alone, like never mind the next 10 years.
And let's stay with it, because you're right. Like, I mean, coming back to what I was talking to Darren and Adam about, I mean, the cost base has lifted considerably on dairy farms as well. Like, I mean, and like, it's not a kind of a single digit cost shift in, like, I mean, you're talking 30-40%. Like, it's huge relative terms, like the cost increase at farm level. Like, I mean, that, you know, if you were into include a cost on the labor that you know, the own labor that goes into the business, like you're over 40 cents over 40 cents a litre in terms of production cost saving.
Yeah, absolutely. The average last year was 35 cents a litre, and that's the average for a whole year. But I was looking at it there.
Now a value on own labour, does it?
That excludes own labour. Yeah, of course. So add on another 5-6 cents for that, depending on the scale of the business, obviously. But I was looking back at the cost of meal this time last year versus what it is now. It's up 25%. You know, so you won't get meat for less than 400 euro a ton now. It was 330, 340 ton this time last year, and we consider that to be dear. So the big price increase we've been talking about for the last number of months, it didn't really affect the full year of 2022, because a lot of farmers had stuff bought in advance, and the prices didn't really rise until April, May. You know, I mean, I know the war started in Ukraine end of February, and there was a couple of weeks there where nothing really happened in terms of prices increasing. So they're really seeing the full impact of that price increase is going to be seen in 2023. And we're also seeing milk price falling. So, you know, in time, commodity prices will fall in line with milk prices, but there's a lag phase.
Yeah.
And farmers could be caught in a tricky position this year that their cost of production are going to be higher than, well, maybe not higher than the milk price, but for periods of the year, it could be that case. And cash could get scarcer fairly quickly, you know, could get scarce fairly quickly unless farmers take action soon to control those costs as best they can. And that's down to usage, because we don't really have an influence over price, but we can influence how much of it we're going to use.
Yeah. And speaking of the price piece, and you touched off it, as you say, I mean, some of the executives were out this week kind of talking down milk price, and in fairness, probably only reflecting what has been happening in the global dairy commodity market over the last couple of months. It has taken a drop down. You know, I mean, we have the butter and the skim that has taken a drop down, but so they're kind of trying to, I suppose, get the word out that, listen, guys, don't be planning on 2022 prices for 2023. I mean, but The thing is, there hasn't been much product sold, we'll say, over the last couple of months by Irish processors, Aidan. Yeah, and because I suppose it's seasonality piece, like, and there hasn't been much milk produced on farms. So they're really only kind of beginning to get milk now, or they'll only get it in the next couple of months. And I suppose there is a little bit of a bounce in terms of, we saw the GDT rising this week, Aidan. So it mightn't be all that bad just yet.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with that analysis, Jack. I mean, and a lot of this, you know, the product has been forward sold and it's in contracts and stuff. So we probably have, you know, been fortunate that we've overwritten some of the big decreases in price that we've seen in the commodity markets, particularly in butter, over the last 2 to 3 months, as well as in September, October time, you know, when they really started going under a lot of pressure. And then when we start ramping up production again in May, June, July, and that product is processed over the following weeks and then sold on, hopefully the commodity markets will have picked up again by the time that product is sold. I suppose there's also, you know, you know, there's the uncertainty around, are the processors selling that product now, you know, in advance of the milk coming? So there's a bit, you know, and do they need to get that out now, or can they delay that selling until we see China back in the market fully?
Yeah.
And supply. I mean, the USDA are predicting a decrease in supply in the US because of, you know, the falling milk prices there. So that's going to have an impact on how much milk is on the global market. And it looks the same across Europe. Like, I mean, farmers in Europe are going to be harder hit by a milk price drop than we are, because they're more exposed to the cost of production cost of production than we are. So you definitely say outlook for supply isn't good, which is a positive really in terms of milk price. And we know that demand will increase at some point because China has to go back into the market again. The predictions were that's going to happen, you know, in late spring this year. Maybe they're coming back a little bit earlier, and that's the indication why, you know, the GDT, the New Zealand auction, was up a bit. So perhaps that's an impact on it. It's too early to tell yet. We need to wait again for another few weeks to see.
Great. To check the pitch, like, and see what's happening. Exactly. No, we'll talk about it again, no doubt, in the next couple of weeks. I mean, just we touched off the cost piece, and fertilizer is one of the big ones. Most of your guys would have some element of their purchasing done. I'll say maybe not the first cut silage nitrogen in the yard, but they definitely have the kind of the grazing nitrogen in store. Is it gone out yet much? And I suppose just think about that for a second. But again, is there as much grass around at the moment on farms as there was last year? I just talking to a couple. They said, "Listen, jeepers, we had much growth over the winter, like kind of more or less where they closed up on, like." Talk to me, kind of, they're both interlinked, both of those, the fertilizer piece. Yeah.
I'd be talking to John O'Loughlin about it anyway. He'll have fair knowledge on that too, you know, in terms of the how much fertilizer has been applied to date. But definitely I do see an offer of tracks and fields where lads have gone out with fertilizer. I mean, conditions are ideal. I think they're right to go, you know, where they're permitted to do so, because conditions are good and there has been good growth, you know, even fields that were grazed maybe 10 days ago, there's a nice little bit of grass coming back on those now again. So there are, you know, there are good conditions there for uptake. In terms of grass itself, Jack, you're 100% right. There is less grass on farms now compared to this time last year, which is unusual because it was a relatively mild winter, you know. But I think the real difference there is the farmers closed with a lot less grass in the autumn than they would have in previous years. And that's why you've got less grass on farms now. I don't think it's all bad. You know, lower covers, they will respond. You know, you'll get through the farm quicker. There'll be less of a white butt at the bottom of the sward, and you should have, you know, good regrowths as a result of that. But I suppose those farms that are higher stocked are going to be under more pressure if they've got less grass in the farm. But it depends on the stocking rate. For me, I think most people are in a good position because the weather is good and they're able to graze fields now and doing very little damage. So, I think it's in a good position overall. Definitely, I'd be recommending to get slurry out and nitrogen out where conditions allow as soon as possible, because you're going to get good uptake in that. And that then will drive on grass growth over the coming 6 weeks.
Okay, and keep it moving, exactly. Last one, Aidan. I mean, in-calf heifers are calved heifers. You know, normally it's probably calved heifers that are sold at this time of the year more so. Like, I mean, are numbers tight that's for sale, Aidan, I suppose, you know, of the kind of good quality calved heifers? Or is it a bit
I don't know, Jack. I mean, definitely, it was funny. Like, the market there, October, November, and even into December, I'd say you couldn't give away in-calf heifers. Nobody wanted them, like. And now the thing has completely changed. Whatever has happened, I'm not sure, but maybe people didn't want to carry them over the winter, or silage might have been scarce. They didn't want to take the risks of them, nitrates, etc. There's a whole load of issues there feeding into that they don't want to carry these extra stock. But now you couldn't find them. You know, there's a big demand now for calves and in-calf heifers, particularly the high-quality ones, as always. But I'm getting calls a couple of times a week. Do I know, you know, I'm looking for 20, 30 heifers, or do you know anyone selling them? So I suppose there's probably more of a focus on quality as well, Jack. You know, very little expansion going on, but the culling rates have been high. People have been are willing to now to reduce, you know, the bottom 5-10% of the cows in the herd. They're putting them into beef as soon as they're not in calf, they're going out the gate, and then they're going to replace them with better quality stock in order to produce the higher milk solids, better fertility. And I suppose that's a good way to increase the efficiency of the national dairy herd as well. So we have to, you know, have to acknowledge that. I think it's a good strategy. And buying good stock is often better than breeding from bad stock. So, look, it's tricky. And I think it's a trend that's going to continue, because farmers aren't going to carry surplus heifers themselves anymore. They're going to be limited by nitrates themselves. There's also the risk element of it. those farmers want to sell the stock in September and October. They don't want to carry them through for the next winter. In the same way, those buying them don't want to carry them through for the next winter. So there's kind of going to be a bit of a Mexican standoff there between sellers and buyers as to the best time to buy those animals. Maybe we won't have to go into a situation where we're going to have a deal done with someone that, listen, carry those until, you know, the 1st of December or 1st of January, and I'll pay a little bit extra for it to cover the cost. So maybe we're going to end up in that kind of a position.
Okay, 100%. Good chat, Aidan. As I said earlier, and you referenced it earlier, you had a chat with John Lofton from Grassland Agro. Let's have a listen.
Well, John, you're very welcome back to the programme.
Come on, Aidan, no bother.
John, I driving around the country this week, I see a lot of cows out grazing. I see a lot of tracks in fields, so farmers have been spreading nitrogen. Just go through, you know, is it the right time to spread now, do you think, and what rate should they be going at?
Yeah, so I suppose like what you're really looking at is applying nitrogen early to grow spring grass. Now, my usual one on this is that the best fertilizer in spring is actually a grazing. So your plant goes into dormancy over the winter. It was a little bit harder of a winter this year. We had some cold snaps. So I suppose getting out and kickstarting that plant out of senescence, which is just dormancy, goes to sleep over the winter, kicking it off is going to be very important. So that kind of guides when you spread your first round of nitrogen. There's no point maybe someone in West Clare, maybe in Clamady, where I'm from, going out whenever it opens up in the next couple of days with chemical fertilizer if they're not going to turn out until the middle of April. But maybe for the lads like yourself in the Golden Vale, Aidan, Brendan, that are blessed enough to have some of the best land in the country, I heard you've cows out day and night, which is exceptional. Like, you know, spring nitrogen is going to be more important and more relevant there.
But John, it is an exceptional spring. I mean, it's been a brilliant last 3 weeks. You know, there's been very little rain. Okay, there's been some cold nights, but you know, temperatures are decent. And as I say, farmers have cows out. Like, so are you saying they shouldn't spread now until they go? And you know, how soon before we, you know?
No. What I'm saying is that you spread if you're going to turn out cows. If you need early grass, then you spread early nitrogen.
Yeah,
but there's no point spreading it just for the sake of it. What you were saying is, yes, it's been a fantastic spring. Ground conditions have improved immeasurably over the space of 2 weeks, like a dream. But I suppose what you're looking at there is that previous to that, there was an awful lot of rainfall, which would, I suppose, leach nitrogen down through the soil profile. It's just a reality. So there was a lot of mineralization coming out of the back end. There was a lot of nitrogen knocking around. Eventually, that has to go somewhere if it's not taken up by the plant. So what you should be doing there is you should be targeting early nitrogen where you need early grass. And the rate, I suppose, it's going down to very low rates as possible. Like, typically it was a half bag of urea because it was easy to spread. But even 15 units could suffice. Now, it's harder to spread. But I suppose when you look at the year, we have to do an awful lot more with less nitrogen. And I think, as Warren Gatlin said, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube after you've used it. Like, you know, so if you use that nitrogen early, you can't make it back up later on where maybe you get a better response in.
Yeah, and of course, it's making the best use of slurry as well, John, to be fair, you know. So if you are spreading slurry, you probably wouldn't go with nitrogen in that first round.
No, you wouldn't. And this is a big one. I suppose last year, because of price and uncertainty around milk price, we all used slurry as that first round of nitrogen and availability, and you name it. But I suppose what's just very important to understand is that 85% of the fertilizer value of slurry is actually made up of the P and K. So it's less so the nitrogen. So it's the same principles. Get that slurry back to your silage ground. If you're lucky enough to have your silage ground on the platform, happy days. Target your low P and K paddocks as well. Very important. Whereas maybe you could actually have better value if you perfect P and K using just urea or protected urea on certain parts of the farm and prioritizing the slurry to order.
It's a good point, John, I suppose. And in fairness, a lot of people have to go early with the slurry because they mightn't have sufficient storage to hold it until, you know, when you're going to put on the silage ground in April or you know, early April or late.
But I would even say that we probably learned to respect slurry an awful lot more in a short period of time, driven predominantly by fertilizer prices. A lot of lads maybe who were, and ladies who were under pressure, maybe went and took a foot out of the tank or, you know, a foot and a half, but they're not just dumping the whole lot out just to get rid of it, which is very good from nitrate's point of view and all that as well.
They bought themselves some time. John, you mentioned price there, and I know there's fluctuations in the market, but where do you think it's going to settle? Or should lads buy now and ladies buy now, or should they hold off for another few months?
Sure, like, listen, a lot of people, I think, have some business done. Anyone who needs to buy nitrogen for maybe the first round or two or up to first cut silage, it's not really going to change a huge amount, to be honest, Aidan. The problem is, though, that everyone, to be honest, it's been slow across the industry. If you talk to any of the co-ops, they tell you the same. And realistically, that's going to lead to huge challenges over a very short period of time during that kind of St. Patrick's Day, traditional, down to the co-op, get our fertilizer, the beef farmers out, the tillage farmers top dressing, you know, so there's going to be a huge demand very quickly. And P&K is rock solid. There's a little bit of ups and downs in nitrogen, but the raw material or the base of ammonia hasn't changed as much as certain nitrogen products. But I'd say hopefully when we get on into the year, things will simmer down a bit on the nitrogen front.
And John, is it the case that people, you know, the merchants have the stocks in the yard now and they don't want to let, you know, while the wholesale price might have fallen, they want to hold on to the product at the prices that are there now because they don't want to sell that at a loss? Is that the case, or is it actually a case that, you know, prices haven't fallen as much as we think they have?
No, it's kind of like, you know, we'll say in the, you know, like we consume gas or whatever, and the gas was taken in at a price. And then that stock has to go through a system, you know, like, but in relation to fertilizer, no, listen, there's no one more that would be happier to go back to normal fertilizer prices than Liam Wolf and Grass and Agro, because the risk and the sleepless nights and listen, those decisions that the lads have to make are big, big business. And that's carried across the supply chain out to the farmer as well, unfortunately. And by the time we get back to reality or normality, whatever the new normal will be, and I don't think it's going to be can at maybe 180 or that. It could be, you know, 400 or 500, and that'll be later on in the year, though, Aidan. Things have to simmer down. But I would say that availability is going to be a pinch because no one has as much stock in the yard as they had, and everyone is very reluctant. And unfortunately, this wave of fertilizer has to go through, and then we'll see where it is. But there's so much going on in the world, like, you know, the with the Ukraine war is escalating. There was obviously a desperate tragedy in Turkey as well. Yeah. And they provide a lot of fertilizer as well. So, like, just when you think nothing else could go too far wrong, like, there's always something around the corner, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's definitely worth being prepared for that. John, I was chatting to one of your colleagues there last week, and they said they're fierce busy doing these sustainability plans. Just explain a little bit about what the program is and what's involved in it.
Yeah, so the site sustainability program, I suppose, is something that we run with all the co-ops, Aidan. And basically what we do is you start simply with a soil sample, develop a fertilizer plan. So that's the right product, right rate, right place, right time. You know, very simple. Trying to use probably more straight so that you don't go bust on your, you know, instead of the typical of going with two bags of 18-6-12 everywhere, you don't need the K there, you don't need the P, it's not enough in another part. So try and use straight, get your P out early, drip feed enough nitrogen for your stocking rate, and then enough sulfur alongside it, and try to do your potash build in the back end, the kind of basic principles of soil fertility. Then what we do is we measure the silage. So stubbornly poor soil fertility on silage grounds. The book probably isn't good enough because it doesn't account for offtakes, which exceed that 5 ton, which was the assumed yield. And then during the summer, we go into the soil biology and the soil structure phase of the program. So we do VEST tests, which is visual evaluation of soil structure. Very good tool. Farmers are very, very interested in it as well when you get into it. And then we do a biology test. I've often slagged Jack about the soil underpants test. I know you're a fan as well. You try it at home all the time. But trying to be a little bit more science around, you know, what typically could be supplied from the soil. At the moment, the problem is we're using a value of 150 kilos on average for every farm in the country. That ranged from a study done by James Humphreys back in the mid-2000s and Kay O'Connell. The range was from 79 kilos of apparent nitrogen uptake per hectare per year in Kilmady to 212 in Palaiskenry, which is only 20 kilometers as the crow flies. But the problem is in that we treat, if the farm in Kilmady was stocked as the same as the farm in Palaiskenry, we'd recommend the same amount of nitrogen.
But there's a huge amount of big variation in the amount of nitrogen that soil is mineralizing. Is that the point you're making?
Absolutely. And like, you should obviously cut your cloth to measure on that as well. And it's the same with maybe some of the debate going on about nitrogen strategies on clover and stuff like that. So we're working now with UCC and Vista Milk on this future size project to try and hopefully develop an end index for grassland or grass clover sward.
Okay. John, before I leave you go, I got a question during the weekend. I didn't know the answer, but I said John O'Loughlin and Grassland Agro would surely know.
Yes,
this farmer, right?
Yes.
Yeah. This farmer has low P and K on their silage fields and has made better use of slurry. So built an extra slurry tank and will have slurry to go, but probably not in early spring. It's more, he's thinking more after the first coat has taken off. Yeah. Does he need to spread 0730 or equivalent of it, you know, the P and K in April with the nitrogen? Or can he wait, just spread nitrogen alone and top up at the background then, you know, top up whatever he's taken off with slurry in June when the silage is cut? And bear in mind now, it is low P and K field, so there's not very little P available, you'd say.
No, that farmer is going to have to feed the crop for the first cut. You're always going to make your best quality silage in first cut, so you don't want to compromise your yield. But I think what they're doing is very important, because generally why we run into poor silage fertility in silage ground is that we put in a decent program for first cut. And then for second cut, we maybe spread 2 bags of cut sward or 3 bags of cut sward, which is equivalent to 30 units of K. We're only tickling it. And you need to get a good, robust program in there of P and K. We found the yields in a first cut silage done with a cut and weigh, done a couple of samples during across the field. And it's generally fairly consistent of yields of up to 10 ton in a single cut, which is 250 kilos of K that's been removed. Mick and the lads inside Moorpark did a couple of trials. It was recently reseeded on plots as well, and they would have found similar yields as well. Like, so there's huge offtakes over what we think, and you have to make sure you get an adequate probe. But building in that farm, I would recommend them measure their silage.
Okay.
Otherwise, they're never going to be able to build. You know, if they don't understand what they're taking off, you could think they're going right by the book and they won't be there.
John, briefly before I let you go, your podcast, who's on it this week and what's the topic?
Yeah, the Sod Pod Aiden, you're coming on yourself soon. You're greeted, which is great. We roll out the red carpet. We had John Brennan from Tirlan on last week. Very good. John talked about, you know, beef, nitrates. I think it's on everyone's mind. He's doing a very good job there with beef and a bit of contract rearing. We talked about, you know, the animal health regulations that are coming. He made one point. He said that with all the, you know, vet med and regulations, that in 2050, I think the department said that more people will die from antimicrobial resistance than cancer.
Yeah, it's a huge issue, and that's probably why we're making such efforts, particularly in the dairy scene, to reduce the amount of antibiotics.
Right, folks, thanks to John and Aidan for bringing us that chat. That's it for another week. Thanks for watching and thanks for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, Adam, Darren and Aidan. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. Thanks to Grassland Agro for helping us to make this show happen. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and stay farming.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.